You're listening to WPWK, Keepers of the Sound. This is Colleen with you, and in the studio with me, I have the legendary Bob Heil from Heil Sound, who is also a friend of Paul W. Klipsch. Could you tell us how you met him?
Well, I got a phone call one day, and I answered the phone, and I said, hello. He said, that you, Heil? And I said, yes, sir. Who's this? That's Klipsch here. And I'm saying to myself, this is God on the other end of this phone. Mr. Klipsch, what can I do for you? You live in that little town up there. You got a cornfield I can come and crash in? And I said, excuse me? Oh, damn it, I want to come and fly my plane. I want to see you. I want to see this big PA you got. I said, well, there's an airport 8 miles south at Sparta. Well, I'll come there. So next day, he flew his plane. I picked him up. And I figured, oh, boy, this is going to be a bloodbath because he's going to see all this stuff. I'm not an engineer. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just putting this stuff together. I'm a ham radio operator.
And he wanted to see what this young whippersnapper was doing.
He wanted to know, why would you have 20,000 watts of PA? But he didn't. He didn't cut me down. Mm. You know, he's quite taller than I, and he's just over my right shoulder all day. Well, why did you do that? Well, how come you do this? Well, how come, what's this for? How do you do that? Da, 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 da. Because these were things Paul Klipsch had never seen. And as I understood later on from their production manager, Bob said to me, you know, this is the first time he really got involved in any rock and roll. He doesn't like all that loud stuff. So he said, this is pretty shocking.
He didn't want to be a friend of the devil.
That's right. So he flew me down the next day, that night, and stayed there in Hope. And the next day took me out to his wonderful lab on that. It was an ammunition depot, just a field, many, many acres, all fenced in. And right in the middle of it reminded me of a little white schoolhouse, and it probably was. Was Paul Klipsch's private lab. Not his plant, his lab, where he did all the thinking and the designing. And he took me there the next day, and it was just incredible. I say this a lot, and please do not misunderstand what I'm saying here, but it was like a drunk meeting Jesus. I learned more stuff in those 2 days. No, I didn't learn, but he was guiding me. You got to go find out what Dr. Fletcher and Dr. Munson did. You need to look at the Bell studies of 1932 about speech articulation, and you need to follow what's going on with Bell Labs before 1920. He's guided me to all of these things. Now, it was difficult. We didn't have Google, mm-hmm. but I went to the library. I started finding what all these pieces that he had written down for me.
So you're doing the due diligence.
Yes. And it changed my entire life because I was like everybody else. I didn't know what was going on. We aren't sound engineers. Sound engineers couldn't do it because they're like, oh, X squared over R equals E. No, 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 man. You get on the stage and you turn that mother up and it's great. You don't worry about how it got here. You mm-hmm. get it here because we didn't have time for all that. I mean,
exactly.
That sounds
great. We don't
crazy.
Have time for the analysis.
That's
just
right.
Do it.
And the engineers got... they'd get really mad and frustrated, and they couldn't work with these guys. Well, being a ham radio operator, that's the way I worked. But anyway, that was such a glorious part where I learned all this stuff. My 20,000-watt PA became 8,000 watts, and it, because of efficiency.
The Klipsch Law.
And then it was louder, more sound pressure. It covered more because he taught me how to splay horns and use 60 degree, 90 degree, 20 degree. Taught me all this stuff. And it was just, it was a big hi-fi system is what we ended up with. And it's why Heil Sound was so popular. Because we, when you go listen to The Who, it was like listening to the records. Mm-hmm. And before that, it was just a mesh of a bunch of loud bleh.
And distortion.
Yes. Yeah. And we were able to do all that. But Paul taught me these things that really meant something. And I'm out today still. I do a lot of workshops teaching
all of those things that Paul Klipsch taught me. And it, was it his ideas and stuff? No, it was science. It was science. And he just discovered the science and applied it to audio.
And he also wanted to share it.
Oh, he was really big about that. But you had to listen to him. A lot of guys, oh, he don't know what he's talking about. Because that's what they didn't know. Man, I'm like a sponge when I get around those people, even today. Mm. And I just can't tell you how blessed I was for that phone call from Paul Klipsch. And it led on to many other things. Of course, we changed the sound system. But then I had this wonderful thing happen along about 74. Jeff Beck's manager called me, said, listen, Jeff's going to do this new thing with a vocalist, and we got to have some monitors. Well, we were the people that brought monitors to the forefront first, because I knew about phasing from my ham radio antennas. Now that sounds ridiculously crazy, but it's true. That's how we can guide signals, either send it to the East Coast or West Coast or whatever. Guide antennas around from phasing. And I applied that phasing to the sound system.
The stage monitors?
Who told me how to do, or who taught me what to do? Joe Walsh. Mm. I met Joe when he was in the James Gang. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks after we were on tour with them, we both figured out we were ham radio operators. And it changed our whole structure of not only there, but life. He's become my best friend. He's my best beta tester because he understands what I'm trying to do. And Joe said to me one time, man, hey, you know, you got that big antenna, man. And when you turned it east, I couldn't hear you. And you turned it west, you were big and loud. Just take that phasing deal you're doing and make that work. And we now use that in our microphones. We have the only microphone. No matter what it is, how much it cost, what the brand is, none of them have 40 dB of rear rejection. We do. Mm. How did I learn it? Joe pointed me to do the phasing thing. And we have some incredible phase reversal. And we did it in those monitors years before. So we were in a rehearsal hall with Jeff. That was a funny story. If we had another 2 hours, I could tell you about that. But when we opened the rehearsal that day, they couldn't find him. And his manager says, let me go get him. He goes outside, and he's underneath his 65 Mustang adjusting the shift linkage. He comes out, and his hands are just horribly greasy. And, oh, man, he says, you're gonna do something to your fingers. Now you ought to cut this out. And, of course, that was Jeff's life and still is, cars, right? But anyway, I have this darling picture. It's really out there on the internet a lot of he and I face to face with Bobby Tench in the back smoking a cigarette. We're in this rehearsal hall with all the amps I had brought over. That was in London, that picture was taken. And we were talking about these monitors he needed. And I said, you know, I can do these monitors better if you don't mind them being bigger. Because everybody wanted little small things, and they didn't, sight lines. Jeff could care less. He wanted to be able to hear. I left London. I went to Hope, Arkansas. I sat down with Paul. I says, Paul, I got this contract, and I need some very, very great monitors. I want to use your La Scala. Oh, that'll work, I said. But I want to take the 15 out and put a 12 in it so it'll be a little lower. Oh, my God, why would you want to do that? You're going to lose all the low end under.
Were you quaking in your shoes?
Yeah. That's it. But, Paul, we don't need the extreme low end. We need that great mid-range articulation that you get from the La Scala.
Yeah, you don't need the low end for a stage monitor.
He was kicking and screaming, but he did it. He built four of them. One of them is here with us today, and I have one of them left. And it was wonderful.
And what's the name of it?
That was the La Scala.
The Runt, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it was so cool to be able to use that, because then everybody got the word that after Jeff's tour that we had those monitors, and a lot of people used them because they really were good.
You're listening to WPWK, Loud and Proud.
This is Colleen from Classic Album Sundays with you. And in the studio, I have Bob Heil from Heil Sound. And you developed that stage monitor where you got the one from Paul Klipsch, the Runt, the smaller La Scala, which is just a wonderful story. But there was another special invention that you had that became quite popular with a lot of 70s acts. Would you like to tell me about it?
Well, this all started in 1939 with another ham radio friend of mine, Alvino Ray, who was the guitarist for the King family. And he would take his wife and stand her behind, one of the King sisters, stand her behind a curtain. And he had a microphone that the World War II pilots wore. Remember, you'd see the old World War II movies. And they had these, they couldn't use a microphone because it was noisy. And they had these buttons that would go on their throat. And as they would talk, it would modulate their throat, right? Well, he turned it backwards. He plugged the output of his guitar amplifier into these modules. And when he would play his guitar, it would cause his wife's singing voice, as she would sing, to vibrate at the frequency of the guitar.
Wow.
That was 1939.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it just kind of disappeared. In 1950, Pete Drake, a steel guitar player in Nashville, he came up with a little 2 or 3 inch speaker in a little box and a funnel. And he did a thing called Forever Yours. Joe Walsh hit that particular device. Pete would never sell it. He would rent it to you if you came to his studio. And Joe heard about it. Being a ham radio operator, he knew about this crazy little device and did Rocky Mountain Way. Joe came to Marissa after the James Gang he left that. He was working on this new band called Barnstorm. And he had this song, Rocky Mountain Way, done with this device. They called it the talking actuator. He said, "Hi, what are we going to do for this live? Because this little speaker would never make it." So it was Joe Walsh and I, WB6ACU and K9EID, these two crazy hams, put a 250-watt JBL driver together with a low-pass, high-pass filter series, so on. And that was the original talk box. We didn't have it. We didn't have an enclosure, so Joe put it in a paper sack and set it down by his mic stand. Kind of looked like a wine bottle, you know, but that, in those days for Joe, that was okay. But that's how the talk box started. No one knew what was going to happen. That song became pretty popular pretty fast. We'd been out with the James Gang doing their sound, and the beginning of my career as a sound company. And a couple of weeks after we were out with him, we both figured out we were ham radio buddies, and it's just a great relationship, and he's so kind to be able to help me beta test things and so on. I kid about it. It's kind of funny. It's, you know, who can have the Eagles as your beta tester? And that's basically what it comes out to be with Joe. But anyway, Rocky Mountain Way was a big song, and nobody knows. You don't do a song and say, okay, this is going to be a big hit. You don't know. The fans and media will make it. Well, it did, and I started, we better do something. So Heil Sound started building the commercial version of the talk box, and it's still there today. I sold the rights back in 88 to Dunlop, who built the strings and a lot of pedals and stuff, and it's exactly the way it was then, only it's black instead of purple. That's another question. There's a good trivia question. Why are we still hanging around with purple? What's all the purple stuff about?
So what's all the purple stuff about, Bob?
It has a beginning. When I started building amplifiers and mixers, we built the first modular mixer. When we were out with the Dead, I said, we got to build a mixer that's modular. So if channel 6 goes out in the middle of a show, you don't have to throw the whole mixer away. Unplug that plug in a new one. Way
very
you go.
Very practical.
And again, ham radio. Mm. That's where I learned to do that. Mm. And
I'd sit out at the mixing console in the middle of the arena, and all my amps and stuff were black. So was everybody else's. So I thought, you can't put the name Heil 4 foot on one of them. You know, that's not right. So I said, I know what I'll do. The 400 watts were purple and the 200 watts were blue. You could sit in the 100th row and tell what they were, because there wasn't any crazy company that would make them purple and blue. Well, that really has stuck. And even up into to today, when we're just building microphones today for the ham radio industry as well as the pro sound industry. We have a lot of people want to know about purple. Well, there's your story.
That's the reason. That's the reason behind it. Well, you gave one of these repurposed talk boxes, now known as a Heil talk box, to another famous musician who you mentioned earlier.
Well, Penny McCall, as I said earlier, was married in my home in Marissa. And she called me a few months later. She says, I've got to get a Christmas present for Peter. And I said, oh, well, I'll send you something. And so I sent her a talk box. And there's really a good video on the Heil Sound website where Peter and I sat down last year in Nashville and did a really nice, he was very kind to tell about how the talk box and Heil Sound, we were on his tours and stuff. We did those tours, how it really meant a lot to his career with that talk box. And so there were so many others. You look at Bon Jovi, that was another one. When they were putting that band together, called me and said, we need a hook to get this band. Every song needs a hook, right? Mm-hmm. Well, there's a band that needed not only a song. They needed a hook to get the band going. And his uncle called me. His uncle was a ham that I talked to on 40 meters every night from the power station where he had his setup. And he said, I need one of those boxes of yours for my nephew. And that's a true story. I sent it to him, and you can write the rest of that history living on a prayer. And so there were so many of them. Slash uses it. Of course, he had it out with Guns N' Roses and Velvet and his own stuff. So many times I hear the talk box. I hear it now in commercials, and you'll hear it in country songs. I even heard some hip-hop songs using it, because it's a very unique product, very unique application of audio.
And it really changed a lot of people's careers, because arguably, Peter Frampton Comes Alive, that was the thing that really put him into the charts.
It's when we do their concerts, especially like Joe, even today when he comes out with the Eagles, all he has to do is hit the first two chords, and that place goes crazy. And it's the same thing with Peter. The first couple of chords, they know what's coming.
And your career has had quite a resurgence in recent years, hasn't it, with the microphones and the PA business?
I got off the road in 1980. Music changed a lot, different things. And Who was off the road, Joe, Frampton, all these guys, they weren't performing. You know, music kind of took a dive there in that 80s, early 80s. I got back into my ham radio and started playing around. Oh my gosh, the audio was terrible on these ham radio transmitters. So we started building things and bringing in equalization and things that had never happened to that industry, and we changed it big time. And so we have dealers all over the world. My wife, Sarah, she owns Heil Sound. She said, I just invent stuff now. But she's an
she runs the show.
She's an incredible business lady, and we have a staff and team that's been, some of them there, 20 years or more. And it's really amazing what's happened to the company with good guidance, and she performs that. We've got great media people and stuff that carry it on. And but I it would have been about 8 years ago, Joe, I started hanging out with Joe a little more after the Eagles really got back together and all that, and he'd call her, you need to come see me. So we're sitting in his kitchen one day, and he brought out this Shure microphone, and he said, you gotta do something with this. I said, what do you mean? You've been using it for years. Yeah, I know that. But he said, it's not the same anymore. He said, they're not made like they were years ago. And he said, your ham radio mic outperforms. And I said, you got to be kidding me. Well, he took me down in his studio, and it did. Mm-hmm. So Joe and I started working on building a new microphone for him, which was basically that ham radio microphone. And who would have thunk it? And here we are today with him being one of my big beta testers to get it going, and now it's Carrie Underwood and
look at Stevie. These microphones we're using right now here in WPWK, your microphones.
Charlie Daniels, all these, and we got thousands of radio stations using the PR40, Electrovoice, all these guys have moved offshore. And the radio station engineers know that. Mm-hmm. And so we're getting tremendous resurgence of being in the market again, only on the other end of the wire, as Joe calls it, microphones, because they really perform. And you see a lot of the award shows, and they'll have Keith Urban and Carrie and all these people with our Heil microphone that they carry with them. We're very blessed by all of this. And it all started with ham radio and the things I learned from Paul Klipsch. Mm-hmm. And I really mean that. He taught me so much about listening and applying that science. It was always about science with Paul.
Now, you're wearing a special pin that was a favorite motto or slogan for Paul W. Klipsch. Could you tell us about that?
I would go to these AES symposiums, and they were meetings held by engineers to exchange scientific findings, okay? Mm-hmm. And Paul was very, very monumental in that whole movement of AES. He'd sit in the front row for each one of those papers. And I went there one time when there was this guy up there telling a story about he had this little box, and this little box could do, I don't know, 10 cycles. And it, you know, just you could tell it was nonsense. Paul stands up, looks back at the crowd, and lifts his collar up. He always wore this button under his collar. And he says, "That's a bunch of bullshit. Now, you either tell them what the truth is, or I'm going to come up there and I'll tell them." And the guy just folds his papers up and trails off in the night. And
it tail between his legs.
Yeah, it carried on when I was with Paul, when he came to see me, and then flew me down to Hope, and then flew me back the next day to Marissa. Mm-hmm. We get out on the tarmac, and he said, "Now, young man," he's shaking my hand, he said, "Now, stick your hand out here." And I held my hand out, and he takes his hand and puts it in mine, and he said, "Now, look. Somewhere in your career, you're going to need to use this, but make sure when you use it that it's scientifically correct what you're trying to do. And if it's not, you use this." And when he took his hand away, it was the famous yellow bullshit button that Paul Klipsch always wore under his collar. Mm-hmm. And as he said, "I use it sparingly, only when I need it, but occasionally I need it," because there are marketing guys out here spreading that particular stuff, and it's not science.
Well, luckily, we have quite a few here at CES.
Yes.
Bob, thank you so much for joining us. It's so interesting to listen to what you've done in sound, your life. You're a great storyteller, and I really appreciate you stopping by WPWK. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for all of your time, and we appreciate Klipsch putting this together. But more than that, I'm very honored that they brought Sarah and I here today to meet you and be on the air and share some of these stories, and they really are actual truth. So what happened behind the scenes in the rock and roll days, and especially the night rock and roll sound was born.
Klipsch Audio, pissing off the neighbors since 1946.